I want to mention a sponsorship that this morning's Divrei Torah should be as a refuah shleima for Tzipora Rachel Bas Perel Miriam. B'soch Shar Chole Yisrael, she should have a refuah shleima. It is of no secret to any of us that we are in the midst of a humanitarian crisis. And as much as we would have wished that we could talk about the simcha of Adar and Purim, and all that's coming up upon us, I thought it was very important that we dedicate this morning's shiur to make sure that we pay attention and we have an understanding into some of what's going on in the world. And although it may not be hitting us directly and personally, we're living here in the United States, and many of us may not have been in direct contact with members of the community in Ukraine or Russia to really know what's going on, it's important for us to have a full and complete understanding that we need to be a part of this as much as they are. Just yesterday, I arranged for a Zoom call. I think there were about 40 or 50 Rabbanim who joined with a very dear friend, Rav Moshe Fima, who is the Rav in Pinsk, Belarus, for the last 27 years. And I said to him that many of us are getting emails from all kinds of different organizations. Nobody really knows what the money's going to or why we need to send money. And I asked him to just tell us what is happening on the ground. Tell me, if I sent you money, where is it going and what's happening? And he gave us an insider view as to his perspectives. And again, he's one of many who are trying to do whatever they can to be helpful. I thought it was helpful to the group of Rabbanim who were on the call, who were on the Zoom with him, to just see this person and understand what he's been going through. And he was describing to us, much of the conversation had to happen in Hebrew, because many of his phone lines are tapped. He has told me in the past that he has a school in Belarus, and on one occasion about 5 or 6 years ago, he sent out an email to the school that they were going to have a color war the next 2 or 3 days. He thought it was a great idea. He learned it from the schools in the, you know, in the United States, and he said he was arrested that night because they said that you're waging war, and he said he spent 3.5 days in jail in a prison cell in Ukraine because he said that he was going to have a color war in school. This is the kind of government that he's dealing with. These are the kinds of law enforcement that he has to put up with. And yesterday our conversation was very, very painful, but really exhilarating, amazing to hear what, you know, just individual people are willing to do for each other, for other Jews who they don't know at all. And he was describing to us how he is taking money. He couldn't get any money out of the bank. The banks aren't giving. He's sending buses into Ukraine, but he said, which bus driver is willing to risk his life to go in? He said he had to pay $30,000 yesterday to get 69 Jews out. The $30,000 was not just for the buses. He had to give them cash. He couldn't get cash. He had to do with cryptocurrency here in the United States. It was amazing how he came up with this idea. And then he said that once they got to the border, it wasn't so safe getting through either. He had to sit there and pay off Ukrainian soldiers to let them through. Because the roads were bombed, he had to go on Google Maps and find them a way through the woods. Literally, like the stories we hear from the Holocaust, he had to smuggle people through. Shabbos. I spoke to him on Erev Shabbos when we were all going into Shabbos. I had to have been in California this past Shabbos. I spoke over Shabbos there. And on Erev Shabbos, I called him and we were discussing. He was just going over with me the halachas, the laws of Pikuach Nefesh b'Shabbos. And he said, he wasn't asking questions. He was just terrified that how many times in your life do you have this kind of opportunity and challenge that you're faced with totally unexpectedly, where you actually have to drive on Shabbos to go save people's lives who are not going to get out without you. And he's paying off government officials, and he's paying off people at the borders, and he's sneaking people through, and it's an unbelievable endeavor. I personally sent him $1,000 yesterday. I'm not a rich man, but I think this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity for those of us who are blessed to be safe and to be whole here in the United States. We should understand that there are many whose lives are in great peril and in great danger. And it's a tremendous chus. How often do you have a chance in your life to do real work with pikuach nefesh mamish? If we don't give the money, if we don't take care of them, there's a very likely chance that many of them will lose their lives. As we know, one Jew was shot dead at the border yesterday. Rabbi Fima said he had 4 buses that were driving right behind that caravan that was shot at. He said, I was terrified. I thought maybe it was mine. But every loss of life, Jewish or non-Jewish, is a tragedy, and it's something that we have to participate in. It's something that we have to be a part of. So I think it's important that all of us, aside from just thinking about it and davening, obviously, for the situation, we need to also make sure that we participate in a very meaningful way, in a very real way, and do whatever we can to be helpful to those who are most involved, even though we may not be in a very hands-on way. So let's talk a little bit about what's happening. In Parshas B'chukosai, the Torah says, "V'nasati shalom ba'aretz." HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises us that he will put peace into the land. And I was thinking, ever since this crisis broke out, it happens, unfortunately, all the time in Eretz Yisrael, that we're used to skirmishes and fighting and all kinds of missiles flying, so maybe we're not so nispoil when we hear about it, but it's extremely dangerous when it happens in Eretz Yisrael. It is also. It happens to be they're blessed to have an Iron Dome, and they're blessed to have this miraculous infrastructure and HaKadosh Baruch Hu looking after them. But it's terrifying. It's very scary. And I wonder to myself, when was the last time you cried when you said Oseh Shalom in Shmona Esrei? When was the last time you cried when you read the word Sim Shalom Tova Uvracha? That is a great bracha. It's something that we don't think about because we live in what we think is, a safe country. It's becoming less and less obvious that that's the case. But cry next time you say Sim Shalom. Realize that there are people who don't have Shalom in their lives, not just because they have an issue of Shalom bias, but because they have an issue of a government that may destroy them, that will give them no freedoms, that will not allow them to live life peacefully. Something to daven for. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in Parshas B'chukosai, "V'nasati shalom ba'aretz," I will bring peace to the land. Rashi says over there, "Shema Tomru," maybe you will say, I feel as if Rashi is speaking to us here in the United States. HaKadosh Baruch Hu promises, I'm going to bring shalom ba'aretz. Shema Tomru, maybe you'll say, Hare Michael, Hare Mishteh. What do you mean? I'm living a comfortable life. I have a luxurious, affluent lifestyle. I have a house. I have my cars. I have everything I need. I have 50 restaurants here in the five towns alone. And I'm able to do whatever I want. And I have my subscription to the gym. And I'm going on vacation with my friends. And I'm signing up for the Pesach program that I'm going to go to. And all the wonderful things that many people in our community are involved with. All sounds great. Rashi says, you'll say to yourself, I have everything. Life is perfect. Says Rashi, Im ein shalom, ein klum. If we don't have peace in the world, then all of that is meaningless. All of that is worth nothing. It doesn't give us any comfort in life if we don't have shalom. And this is what HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, writes Rashi, Mikan shehashalom shakol keneged hakol. To have a calm, serene, peaceful atmosphere is what all of us look forward to. V'chein hu omer, and this is what we say in our davening, Oseh shalom uvareyas hakol. HaKadosh Baruch Hu first makes shalom in the world, and then boreyas hakol. If you don't have shalom, then creating everything else is meaningless, because people cannot enjoy the creation if we don't have peace in the world. So the Mishnah says in Maseches Uktzin, this is actually the last Mishnah in all of Shisha Sidrei Mishnah, Lo matza HaKadosh Baruch Hu kli machzik bracha liYisrael ela hashalom. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's greatest gift to the world is the fact that he gives us the ability to have peace. Shenemar Hashem oz le'amo yitein, Hashem yivarech ha'samo v'ashalom. So Rav Asher Weiss told me on many occasions that perhaps what this means is, imagine you have somebody who goes to the store and you want to purchase valuable or very expensive wines, all kinds of very expensive items, but you don't have any kind of container, you don't have a vessel, you don't have a capsule to put it in. So it's very nice that you're going to the winery and you're seeing very expensive wines and you appreciate it, but you have nothing to bring it home in. So of what good is your visit? You can't do anything with all that you see. While it's true that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us so much bracha in our lives, while it's true that he gives us all the different things that are so valuable to us, but if we don't have a container to hold it all, if we don't have a receptacle that's going to be able to amass everything that is important to us in life, then all of that has no value at all. And that is what it means that the kli machzik bracha liYisrael is shalom. That which is the container that holds all the gifts that we have together is shalom. Recently I was talking to somebody who's a grandson of Rabbi Abraham J. Twersky. And we were talking about something to do with his grandmother. His grandfather passed away a number of years ago, recently, maybe 1 or 2 years ago, not so long ago. And he mentioned to me that his grandmother told him that at every wedding that his grandfather went to, he always gave the same bracha to a chassan and kala. And his bracha was, I wish that you should have many worries in your life. And they would always look at him with a blank stare. What a strange blessing. What a strange bracha that is. I wish that you have many worries in your life. And he said, when somebody has a terminal illness, they don't have many worries. They have one thing that they're worried about, and that's it. And the fact that they missed the carpool this morning, and the fact that they have a flat tire, and the fact that other things that they didn't pay the bills, is not anything that worries them, because the only thing that they're focused on is the big issue, which is an overwhelming issue, taking up all the space in their mind and in their heart. And that is the bracha that he gave. It's such a brilliant bracha. You should have many worries. Yes, you should worry about the carpool, and you should worry about the flat tire, you should worry about the dent on your car, you should worry about your kids not going to sleep on time, and all the different little things that we worry about is a gift. It's a bracha. When there's no shalom ba'olam, I was talking to Rabbi Fima yesterday, these people in Ukraine whose lives are in jeopardy, whose lives are in danger, are not thinking about anything else. He told me they had beautiful homes. They left Ukraine with less than one suitcase. Literally what we hear about the Holocaust. They left Ukraine and brought no clothing with them. And he said, somebody who's living a normal life, I'm not going to take secondhand clothing from the Jews who are sending all their shmatas from wherever it is. I'm going to allow them to try to live a life like a mensch, like they lived before. It's not so easy to do that. But can you understand? Can you imagine? They have one worry. The only worry is survival. Am I going to get out? I'm not worrying about what I'm wearing tomorrow morning. I'm not worrying about whether or not I have a place to shower, a place to sleep, where I'm going to live. Let me get out first. That is the only worry. And we wish that beautiful bracha that we should all have many worries in our lives. We shouldn't be put in that position where we only have one thing that is taking up the overwhelming majority of all that we think about all day long. So the Chafetz Chaim, about 100 years ago, writes so beautifully. Let's read it in number Dalet. The Chafetz Chaim says, V'karav hadavar miyod, shezmanenu hu ikvasa de Mashicha. The Chafetz Chaim writes that he believes, this was again 100 years ago, that we are coming closer to the times of Mashiach. He just had that feeling. Obviously, he writes the Chafetz Chaim, we should all do our best to learn Torah, to do nice things to each other, ulaharbos shalom b'Yisrael, and to do our best to show that we really appreciate each other. Kedesha tachria kaf shoschus, writes the Chafetz Chaim, ve'eich lo yechrad lev kol ish Yisrael liros. How horrifying is it, writes the Chafetz Chaim, shedavka b'zman hazeh, that in this generation, at this time of ikvasa de Mashicha, matzliach maseh ha-satan laharbos ketatos amerivos bekama ayaros b'Yisrael. We see bickering and conflict and all kinds of silliness and friction between families and communities, and they're fighting over hashkachas, and they're fighting over restaurants, and they're fighting over silliness. This is what we're busy with when the world is falling apart around us. This is what our attention is going toward, attacking people in the newspapers and writing horrific posts. This is what we're doing, writes the Chafetz Chaim. Take a step back and look at what's happening in the world. Get a bigger perspective and understand our minds need to be enlarged. We need to think larger. We need to think bigger. We need to expand our vision. And he says that at times like this, Ayedeza neschalo shem shamayim miyod, ad kama hachiv gadol al kol mashiyesh biyado limchos, shalola haniach al kol chavero she'avon plili hu meod, v'al kein achavereya, and he says, therefore, I beg of you, chusana al atzmechem, v'al kla Yisrael, have mercy on the Jewish people. Kedei shelo yeh shmo hagadol mechulal, v'yisameitz laharbeus shalom b'mekomo. Try as much as you can to bring goodwill and friendship in your community. Nizka l'shmo kol mevaser shalom ba'olam. And let us hope, writes the Chafetz Chaim, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who we refer to as the Osa Shalom Imaromav, who Yasa Shalom Aleinu, we hope that in return HaKadosh Baruch Hu will do the same. I remember an amazing story that I read from the Geru Rebbe, the Imri Emes. He writes a mashal about a family that had a number of children. And the way it was in Europe was, a young woman would get married, and I think the understanding was that the parents would provide the food for the first year or two, whatever it was, the family would all eat together. Maybe it was longer. So this man, a very wealthy man, has two daughters. He marries both of them off. He has two sons-in-law. Each of them have children. And he's having the family over every night for dinner. The problem is they were incompatible because one of them had very hypersensitive allergies in one direction. He was lactose intolerant. And the other one had hypersensory allergies in the other direction. So both of them were incomplete. One of them could only eat meat, and one of them could only eat milk. So they each had a problem. And we all know that you're not allowed to eat meat and milk at the same table, even if you're not eating them together. One person should not be eating milk and the other person eating meat on the same table. We're afraid that they're going to get confused. So every night, it was very upsetting. But every night he had to set up one table in the kitchen where they used to serve the milchiks, and he used to have to set up one table in the dining room where they would serve the fleishiks. And it bothered him. He was going back and forth every night. One night he would spend with this family, one night he would spend with the other family. It was pathetic. And finally, this very wealthy man loses all of his money. And he's no longer able to provide the beautiful meats and the beautiful dinners that he was serving for his family. And now they're down to onions and potato peels. That's all he could serve. And the next night everyone comes to dinner, and he sees how one family goes into the kitchen and the other one goes into the dining room, and he begins to cry and he says, "Now that we're in this miserable state of being and all we have is potato peels and onions, you still can't figure out how to sit around the table? You still have to go to the kitchen and the dining room? This doesn't make sense. It's pathetic. Figure out how to get along. Figure out how to sit around the same table and be compatible with each other and have some harmony." So the Imri Emma said, "While it's true that it's very famous that there were very major disputes in the days of the Baal HaTanya and the Vilna Gaon, and they had disputes l'shem shamayim about whether or not Hasidus was good, Hasidus was bad, and we should go with the old tradition, a new tradition, whatever it may be," he said, "that was in the days of the Vilna Gaon and the Baal HaTanya, when they were very wealthy spiritually, and they had what to fight about." He said, "Now, we're many generations later, and we're very poor spiritually. And all we're left with is the spiritual potato peels and onions. Can't we sit around the same table? Look at the experience of Jewish people here in the United States. Think about not our communities, but think about the intermarriage rate in the country that we live in. Think about how rampant that is. How many out of 10 Jews are actually going to marry Jewish? Don't think about yourself. We're in a pathetic state of being spiritually as a people. And we're still worried about this and that, and we're worried about small things instead of seeing the larger perspective and the bigger picture." And that, writes the Imri Emma, is an opportunity that we have to think about. Unfortunately, we know the world is currently in a state of milchama. No shalom between countries, and we have sanctions and aggressive fighting and warfare and terrible hostility. And many of us are befuddled. Many of us are wondering. We're surprised. And we see the images. Not in every previous war do we have instant access to images and videos that are happening on the ground. But now we live in an age of social media, and we have the opportunity to see things the minute they happen. And satellite images that can show us 40 miles of a convoy trying to go and besiege a capital city. And we're watching tanks and innocent civilian casualties and sanctions from one country to another and refugees and rescue efforts and stock markets that are crumbling. And I don't know what to say. I'm not sure what to say. I'm just as confused as everybody else is. But Chazal do make an important comment just to frame the conversation for us a little bit. Number hey, the Medrash tells us, Im ra'isa malchios miskaros elu be'elu. If you see countries that are fighting with each other, like we see today, countries that cannot seem to get along, Tzifei l'raglo shel Mashiach, understand that this is an opportune time. Understand that in some way it's a fortuitous time. There's something special. There's something going on. It's something larger is happening in the world. Wake up and realize it. It's not just that one country doesn't get along with another. You think the Ribono Shel Olam is not involved? Do you think HaKadosh Baruch Hu took a step back and said, "You know, I'm going to let Putin just destroy his neighboring country and kill innocent civilians"? Something larger is happening. What is that larger perspective? I don't know. But the Medrash here says, it's obviously a time where bigger things are happening. We say it in our davening every day. Maybe we don't pay attention, but I hope tomorrow you will. Where we say in the davening in Birchus Kriya Shema in the morning, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the Baal Milchamos. You know what that means? Baal Milchamos doesn't mean he's involved in war. It means he is the one who is leading the war. But then it says that he is also Zareat Tzedakos, Matzmiach Yeshuas. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is the one who has the ability to end all war. Borei Refuos, Nora Sehilos. And then we're told in the end that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, we hope he'll be Or Chadosh Al Tzion Tar V'nizkeh Hulano Mehera Liyoro. That's the way we end the bracha. It means that there's some kind of progression there. It starts off with Melchama. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has the ability to bring Shalom, to make it all die down, to make it all quiet down. And then he has the ability to bring us a Geula. All of that is connected. All of that is connected, and we say it in our davening every single day. And this is something that is terrifying, to watch the acute danger that people are in. What we certainly have to do is display and demonstrate and exhibit our sense of concern toward all of those whose lives have been upended. There's a Mishnah in Pirkei Avos when we're told, Heveidanas kal adam lekaf sechus. So the Mefarshim ask, why? Why do I have to be done everyone lekaf sechus? Let me come to my own conclusions. Whatever I decide to think about people is in my head. I'm not going around slandering them. I'm just not interested in this person. I'll judge them however I want to. And the Mefarshim explained the reason why it's important is because the Maharal writes that judging people favorably and treating other people favorably is anaf me'avas Hashem. That is an extension of our mitzvah of avas Hashem. It's an addendum to the mitzvah of avas Hashem. Writes the Maharal, Mishu oev es Hashem yizbarach, ohev es habrios. If you love the Ribono Shel Olam, then you love people. Then you love humanity. Shehem bruav asher shayachem lo umutzurafim elav. Because the Ribono Shel Olam is the one who created humanity. If you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you love people. And you cannot get up and say, well, how many Jews have lost their lives? You know, I'm not really paying attention to what else is going on in other communities in the world. We must pay attention. If you love HaKadosh Baruch Hu, then you love people. It doesn't say you love Jews. The Maharal says you need to love and care about people. And when there's a humanitarian crisis like the one we're having now, we need to think about how much we appreciate people, about how much we care about people. The Navi Yeshaya refers to Avram Avinu as Zera Avram Ohavi, which is interesting. Avram Avinu is referred to as the one who is beloved, who is admired by HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And the Chasam Sofer asks, why was Avram Avinu admired by HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Probably many reasons why HaKadosh Baruch Hu loved him, but explains the Chasam Sofer, perhaps the reason why is because Avram Avinu made sure to put his focus on the entire community. Avram Avinu was involved, he was completely engaged, he was completely connected with every aspect of society in his generation. And he invited all of them into his home, and he did not ask them questions beforehand, what religion they serve and what kind of people they're from. Avram Avinu was a person who was completely engaged with every member of society. That is why HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Zera Avram Ohavi. That's a person who I love. And the reason why the Ramchal writes, look at number Vav. I actually don't have a lot of things on my desk, but this is actually a paragraph that I do have sitting on my desk because I find that it is so touching. When I saw it many years ago, to me, it was a charge for how we're supposed to live every single day, and I wrote it down on a piece of paper. It was actually before I had a computer, and I've kept it on my desk ever since. Because to me, it's so poignant. And it's so stunning. The words of the Ramchal in the Mesilas Yesharim. Ein HaKadosh Baruch Hu ohev, ela lemisha ohev es Yisrael. Who does the Ribono Shel Olam love? He loves the person who loves other people. Now writes the Ramchal. V'chol ma she'adam magdil ahavaso liYisrael. The more that a person grows and cultivates and expands their love for others, Gam HaKadosh Baruch Hu magdil alav. So too HaKadosh Baruch Hu will expand His love for you. The Ribono Shel Olam will cultivate a greater love for you. Ve'elu heim haroim ha'amitiyim shel Yisrael. That is what it means, says the Ramchal, to be a true leader of the Jewish people. She'HaKadosh Baruch Hu chafetz behem harbe. Who does the Ribono Shel Olam admire as a leader? The people who are mosrim asmam atzonam, the people who care deeply about others, v'darshim u'mishtadlim al shlomam v'tovasa machal adrachim, and they advocate and encourage for a better life for other people throughout their experience. Zelema doma in the last line, le'av she'eno oev shum adam, who is the most beloved person to you? Who do you appreciate most? I feel we send our children to school, and all the teachers are wonderful, and we owe them all a tremendous debt of gratitude. But which teacher do you love more? The teacher who made sure to teach your child everything there is to know, to make sure they're going to pass the SATs, and to make sure that they're going to be the smartest one in the class, and really understanding everything? or the teacher who calls you every once in a while and tells you something very special about your child? Think about it. There's nobody we appreciate more than the people who love our children. There is nobody we appreciate more than the people who love our children. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says the same. Av she'eino oiv shum adam yoser mimi shehu roe she'oiv banav ahava ne'emenes. There is nobody who HaKadosh Baruch Hu loves more than the person who shows that he appreciates HaKadosh Baruch Hu's children. V'hu davar she'hateva yoyed alav. It's something that nature has proven to be true. You say something nice to a parent about their child, it's hard to describe the amount of emotion and feeling that the parent will have. People come over to me all the time after I speak in different places, and I say, it's okay. You want to do something nice? Send my parents an email. I don't need to talk to you. I'm fine. I know what I do. Send my parents an email. I know my father is a gadol b'Yisrael, it's true, and he has lots of other things to take care of and be busy with. I can guarantee you there's nothing that makes him more excited than when he hears about his children. Not me. I'm an embarrassment. But when people come over to him and say, you know, your daughter who's a nurse in Colombia helped my children, and your daughter who has a PhD living in Israel, who is working on cancer research, actually help my family navigate what they're going through. Is there anything that can give a parent more joy and more satisfaction than that? To hear that people appreciate their children. Writes the Ramchal, it's a davar shehateva yoyed alav. It's something that's natural for all of us. We know it to be true. So where's the disconnect when it comes to HaKadosh Baruch Hu? Is there anybody the Ribono Shel Olam can possibly love more than the person who tells the Ribono Shel Olam, I love your children, I appreciate them, I'm willing to help them. Your children are having a hard time, I'm willing to go on the limb for them because I care deeply about them. Writes the Ramchal, the person who makes sure to expand their love for other people is the one who HaKadosh Baruch Hu will go out of his way to cultivate and expand his love for as well. There's a beautiful story that is told about the Chafetz Chaim, that on one occasion, the Panovitz Rav was traveling from one town to another, and at that time, his train stopped off in Radin, which was the town of the Chafetz Chaim, and he figured, once I'm here, I may as well get off at the station and go get a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim before I continue my journey. And he knocked on the Chafetz Chaim's door. The wife, Mrs. Chafetz Chaim, whatever her name was, came to the door, and she said, my husband will be out in a few minutes. If you want to wait here, he's just in the other room. He said, I can wait outside. You tell me what to do. She said, no, it's fine. You can wait here in the dining room. He's just in the bedroom. He'll be out in a few minutes. And he sat there, and a couple of minutes went by, and he was horrified, and he was ready to run out of the house. He heard the Chafetz Chaim shrieking in pain. And he felt so bad. He's obviously in so much pain. I'm going to make his wife drag him out of bed to come see me. I don't really need anything. I don't need to talk to him. I was just passing through. I figured I'd say hello and get a bracha from the Chafetz Chaim. So he gets up and he's about to leave the room. And the Chafetz Chaim's wife notices that he's uncomfortable, and she says, where are you going? My husband will be out in a few minutes. He says, it sounds like your husband is very uncomfortable. Sounds like he's not feeling well. It sounds like he's in pain. I don't want to bother him. I'll come back another time. She said, no, my husband's fine. A woman came about 20 minutes ago, right before you showed up, and said she was on the way to deliver a baby. And she's in tremendous pain. And she asked my husband to daven for her. This is what happens when someone comes to my house and asks my husband to have them in mind in a tefillah. He actually feels their pain. It sounds like his life is falling apart. He'll be okay. He's going to come out in a few minutes. He'll talk to you. And the Panovitz Rav said, at that moment, he said, I'm never leaving this community. And he stayed to learn by the Chafetz Chaim. He said, if you can have a person who cares so deeply about others. A woman knocked on his door and said that she was in labor and asked for him to daven for her. And that's how he responds. He canceled his train and he never turned back. Because that's the kind of leader that we need to gravitate toward. I find it fascinating that we live in a global community more connected than the world has ever been. We do business and we interact and we make shidduchim and we have phone calls with people on the other side of the world on a daily basis with people in other countries and other continents, and yet at the same time we see that relationships are corroding. As connected as we are, we've never been so disconnected. As much as people have Facebook friends all over the world and followers on Instagram, they have no meaningful relationships. So they're connected and they're all over the place, but there is no connection. And it's an opportunity for us to remind ourselves that the most meaningful part of life is to focus not on the likes and the follows and how many people are interested and celebrating us, but let's go back to the basics of what relationships really mean, of what having real connection with people is all about. The Gemara says in Maseches Tainus, a very instructive comment. If you look at the second side of the page here, the Gemara tells us, Tana Rabbanan Bisman She Yisrael Shiruyim Bitzar, if there is a difficult situation happening in the world in a Jewish community somewhere, Upirish Echad Mehem, and one Jew decides to isolate himself, to separate himself, to choose not to identify with what's happening, the Gemara says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says about such a person, Ploni zeh shapirish min hatzibur al yireh ben achamas hatzibur. This person who chooses to separate him or herself from what's going on in the world, from what's happening, will not have the opportunity to be a part of the grandeur of the Nechama when it all comes to a close and life is very rewarding. Tanya Idach, the Gemara says, Bizman she hatzibur shari bitzar. When the community is having a difficult time, Al Yomar Adam, one does not have a right to say, Eilech lebeisi va'ochal ve'eshte, it's not my problem. I'll go home, I'll go to the gym this morning, I'm going to do everything like I do in my normal routine, I'm going to have everything happening, I'll get together with my friends for lunch today, I'm going to go on with business like usual. V'shalom alai nafshi, which is exactly what you're saying when you do that. Shalom alai nafshi, life is fine for me. Ask yourself, how much time did you spend yesterday worrying about the Jews in Ukraine who are about to lose their lives potentially? How much time? How much time did you spend looking at the news and doing other things? And how much time commensurate to that did you spend doing something about it? How much research did you do? How many phone calls did you make? Who did you speak to? How much did you try to help? Writes the Gemara, if there's a tsar going on in the world, Al Yomar Adam, dare you say, Eilech lebeisi ve'ochal ve'eshteh. I'll do my own thing. I have a program to run. I have things to do. V'shalom alecha nafshi. It's not my issue. Ela yitzar Adam in ha'atzibur. A person needs to make sure that they identify with what's happening in the world, with what's happening to atzibur, with the danger that they are incurring. The Rambam even says, Haporish midarkei ha'atzibur. If someone isolates themselves from what's happening with a tzibur, that is one of the things that holds someone back from doing tshuva. So there's a lot to say about that. What does that have to do with tshuva? It's an interesting discussion. But that's what the Rambam tells us. A very intriguing Gemara Maseches Brachos Daf Yud Beis, look at number Ches here, where the Gemara tells us, I'm not saying any chidushim, I just put together what was on my mind. I wanted to put it on paper. I hope it's meaningful to everyone else. But just to frame a little bit of the thoughts that are swimming around in my head. So the Gemara says in Brachos Daf Yud Beis, Kol she'efshelo levakesh rachamim al chaveir ve'enem mevakesh. So very often we know somebody who's going through a difficult time. Somebody who needs a shidduch, someone needs a parnasa, someone who needs a refuah shleima, all kinds of different things that people are worried about. And we talk to them. Not always do we daven for them. Doesn't always happen. So you'll say, so I didn't daven. Okay. I'm not talking about random Tehillim chats that we know nothing about. That's a different story. Talking about something that you're acutely familiar with, fully aware of, and you don't offer a tefillah. So I would say, so you didn't offer a tefillah. The Gemara says a fascinating comment. Someone who has the opportunity to be mevakish rachamim al chavero ve'ena mevakish, you know that another person is going through a very hard time, and you choose not to daven for them, Nikra chote, the Gemara says. It's as if you have violated an avera. It's a chet. Shenemar, as the pasuk says in Sefer Shmuel, Gam anochi chalila le mechato la Hashem. I feel badly that I have sinned before HaKadosh Baruch Hu mechadol lehispalel ba'adchem, because I held myself back from davening, from praying on your behalf. That's a fascinating statement. A chet means when I hurt someone. A chet means when I hurt the Ribono Shel Olam. A chet means when I do something wrong. Here, I just didn't do something good. How can that be classified? How can that be categorized as a chet? What does the Gemara mean? I wasn't sure exactly what it meant. I came across something yesterday that I thought was very eye-opening. It was an interpretation of Rav Kook. In his Sefer Ein Ayah, which is on Maseches Brachos, he explains many of the Gemaras there. And he writes the following. We believe, he says, I didn't put it on here. We believe, Mishar Sheh Emunah V'Yesodeh HaChachma HaElokis. One of the foundations of our belief is, Ladas, to know, She'ein davar shenasa ba'olam v'yesh mimenu totzos l'goral ha'adam hamusari shenasa b'mikra. There is nothing that happens in the world that is coincidental. There is nothing in the world that is happenstance. HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a purpose, an objective, a goal, an aspiration for everything that happens in the world. There is a reason for it. Now, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a reason. We don't always appreciate or understand the reason, but we do believe, as Jews who are firm believers in the Ribono Shel Olam, that there is a reason, there's a tachlis mechuvenes. There is a understated goal to everything that happens in the world. The pasuk says in Parshas Ha'azinu, Hatsur tamim pa'alo, ki chol derachav mishpat. We believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes a calculation for everything that happens in the world, and everything that he does is somehow justified. So the Mefarshim say there, they quote from Chazal, what does it mean, Hatsur tamim pa'alo? You know, sometimes as a parent, you have to also react when children act inappropriately. And sometimes you overreact, and sometimes you underreact, and you don't always strike it the right way. You don't always get it perfectly. We're all human beings. We make mistakes. And sometimes you'll see a parent who yells at a child. What are you yelling at the child for? The child is a child. There are other ways to get your message across, but parent doesn't always keep in mind the perfect balance. And sometimes, when doing so, you embarrass or humiliate a child that didn't deserve to be embarrassed. You know, how many times have we seen in a playground a kid is doing something, he's acting like a kid, and the parent yells at them. Did that kid deserve to be ashamed and embarrassed in front of everyone? Probably not. But the parent was just reacting. It's not the way it works with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Chazal tell us that every time HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so to speak, Kabayachal, every time he reacts, every time he responds to anything, it is with a perfect calculation. Which means, Chazal say, Rachmana Litzlan, someone gets sick. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a calculation why that person should be sick. But what about the collateral damage? What about the fact that their best friends are going to really be hurt by it? That they're not going to be able to function as a result of what they're experiencing with their friend? Writes the Medrash, all of that collateral damage was taken into account when HaKadosh Baruch Hu made the Gzeira. Somebody passes away tragically, and all the people who are close with that individual are going to have a very difficult time dealing with that tragedy. Don't think that that was just coincidental. HaKadosh Baruch Hu took every single person into account. Hatsur tamim pa'alo. Ki chol derachav mishpat. El emuna ve'ein avel. HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes the entire picture into account before doing anything. And writes Rav Kook, when the Ribbono Shel Olam makes something happen in the world, we believe that there is a reason for it. So you have a friend who's not well. And the Gemara says here, you have the opportunity to be mevakish rachamim alav. You have an opportunity to offer a tefillah for them. You have a friend who is unsuccessful in getting a shidduch. And you have an opportunity to offer a tefillah on their behalf. And you choose not to. You know why that's a chet, says Rav Kook? Because there's something larger happening in the world and you are remaining indifferent to it. And you are ignoring it. There's something bigger that's happening in your own life or in your friend's life who's close to you. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's directing it at you. If it impacts you in any way, it means it was meant to impact you. And you're ignoring it and you remain apathetic and you're unresponsive and you're inattentive. Nikrachote. How can you allow things to happen in the world and you just ignore it and you go on as if nothing's happening? And that, says Rav Kook, is what the Gemara means. That these moments are opportunities for real intense dveikus ba'akadosh baruch hu. Moments when larger things are happening in the world are moments to have the opportunity to connect with the Ribbono Shel Olam. That is obviously what he wants you to do. He's sending messages. So he sends all kinds of different messages. Do we understand what the message is? Do we know what it is? No. Sometimes we do, other times we don't. But you're going to waste an opportunity. You're going to allow HaKadosh Baruch Hu, who made all of this happen, to wake people up. You're going to allow all of that to just be ignored. And we're just going to go on with life like nothing happened. I think about it when we recall what happened in the intense months of the pandemic. So we were so busy worrying about survival that we weren't paying attention to the larger context. But the Ribbono Shel Olam made this happen. The Ribbono Shel Olam made this happen. And how many people do you venture to say actually took a step back to ask themselves, how am I supposed to be connecting in any more meaningful way? The Ribbono Shel Olam is putting me through this. There's a reason for it, obviously. As a believer, we all believe that. We share that belief. Writes Rav Kook, person who goes through experiences in life and chooses not to reach out to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and chooses not to use them as points of connection and chooses to ignore every sign and every message. Nikrachote, yes. How embarrassing is it for a parent who sits at a Shabbos table, has a teenage young son, ask them 10 times, can you please do something for me? Can you please get a drink from the refrigerator? And the child just sits there with their arms crossed, straight face, ignoring their parent. We've all seen it, right? Is there anything more hurtful and disrespectful and embarrassing than that? I mean, there are. But it's pretty embarrassing. If we have a relationship with someone, we expect that we're going to be in conversation. We can be in communication with each other. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu communicates with us, and we just sit there with a blank stare and ignore his communication, writes Rav Kook, that's what the Gemara means. Nikrachote. That's what it means. It means you're ignoring the opportunity to connect with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Let's go back to the story in Parsha Shmos, when we're introduced to Moshe Rabbeinu. The psukim tell us, "Vayhi bayamim ha'ein, vayigdal Moshe vayitza elecha vayar b'siv lo sam." Moshe Rabbeinu grows up. He's living in the palace of Paro, and he goes out to see what's happening with the Jewish community, and he sees how much they're struggling. Hayaroh b'siv lo sam u'bocha v'yomer. Moshe Rabbeinu had a perfect life. He's living in the palace of the king. He could have lived out his whole life and been fine, but he goes out. He doesn't just go out. He notices what's happening. He doesn't just notice what happened, he begins to cry for what is happening. V'omer, and he says, Chaval li aleichem. Mi yitein musi aleichem, I wish I can die in the place of all the hard work that you're doing. What is life worth living for me in the palace when I have all of this, but all of you are out here suffering? How many of us think like that? What is life worth living if there are thousands of Jews who don't know whether they're going to be able to have life tomorrow? Because maybe a bomb will fall on their community. Moshe Rabbeinu says, Chavali aleichem, mi yitein musi aleichem. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the Ribbono Shel Olam, responds, Atahi nachta asarkecha v'halachta liros b'tzaron sher Yisrael. You went out, left everything else aside, and went out and paid attention to the difficulty that is befalling the Jewish people. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says in response, Ani meniach al yonim v'tachtonim v'adaber imcha. You know what? I have a lot of important things to do today, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says. I made a schedule of what I'm going to be busy with, but I'm going to put it all aside because I'm going to focus on you. You focus on other people. You put other things aside. You put your own preferences in the back of your mind. And the forefront of your mind is what's happening in the lives of others. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, I'm going to do the same to you. We look in the beginning of Parsha Shmos, and the Torah tells us the development, the history, the background of Moshe Rabbeinu's life. So it says that Moshe Rabbeinu vayigdal Moshe. He grows up. Rashi's bothered. He grows up. Did you ever meet a child that didn't grow up? Yes, we've all met. But did you ever meet a child that didn't mature, that didn't physically grow up? So why do we have to be told vayigdal Moshe? Of course, if he was born and he's still alive, it means he got older. Of course he got older. Rashi says it means not vayigdal in the physical sense. Vayigdal means he became very prominent. Rashi tells us sheminehu paro al beso. Paro gave him an official position in the cabinet of the Egyptian monarchy. Sheminu al beso. He was in charge of the White House. He was the one in charge of Paro's palace. Minuhu al beso. And yet, you can have a person who is linked and affiliated and associated with the monarchy, who's living a dream. And that is the person who goes out, leaves it all aside, and wants to see what's happening with his brothers, and wants to understand how difficult their predicament is, even though it makes no difference to him at all. He's living more than a perfect life, but he cannot live life without going out and making sure he understands what's happening with his community. So you'll say, well, the whole community was in jeopardy, so he's going out and worrying about the whole tzibur. You then find the psukim tell us it goes beyond that. He thinks about a yachid as well. He thinks about an individual. Vayar ish mitzri make ish ivri me'achav. He doesn't just go out and survey the scene and see that everyone is working hard and lives are being upended. No. It's not just worrying about a big group of people. He pays attention to an individual. He sees one Egyptian is hitting one Jew. No, let it be. What are you getting involved? Why are you getting involved? Let him kill the Jew. You're risking your own life for one person? Moshe Rabbeinu says yes. He was so on fire with his love for other people. Yes. I don't just care about the community. I care about one person also. Goes further. Moshe Rabbeinu has to leave the country. His life is in danger. He's a fugitive. He goes to Midian. Can you imagine what's going through his head? All kinds of anxieties, his apprehension. Moshe Rabbeinu is a fugitive. He thinks he's going to be killed. He thinks someone's running after him. Here he is in Midian. He needs a drink. He stops by the well. He sees a bunch of young women are being abused by the well. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up and stands up to defend them. What are you getting involved? You don't even know who they are. They're not even Jewish, Moshe Rabbeinu. They're not part of your community. You're not part of this community. Stay out of it. It's not the way a human being behaves, says Moshe Rabbeinu. We get involved. We show that we care. When there's a humanitarian crisis, you get involved. Doesn't matter whether they're Jewish or they're not Jewish. Doesn't matter if it's your community or someone else's. Doesn't matter if your life is perfect or if it's not. Moshe Rabbeinu teaches us what it means to be a real Jew. The Medrash tells us, commenting on the pasuk in Tehillim, "Bechal tzarasam lo tzar." that when we have pain, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is in pain along with us. That is why the Gemara says in Maseches Tainis Daf Tazayin that when you have a tragedy that befalls the Jewish people, so we know, the Gemara has a whole list of different things that should be done. One of them is that we should institute a day of fasting. And the Gemara says the reason why we do that is that we should have an opportunity to do tshuva and to remind ourselves of our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu to return. So the Gemara says when we do that, we make a big spectacle out of it. And it says they used to go out into the streets and they would take the Sifrei Torah and the Aron Kodesh into the street and they would show how pathetic the community is. They would show HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They would go out in sackcloth. They wouldn't wear their regular clothing. And then the Gemara says they would put ashes on top of the Sifrei Torah and on top of the Aron Kodesh. That's the way the Rambam explains it. Why? So the Gemara explains the reason why is because B'chol tzarasam lo tzar. Because imo anochi b'tzara. We don't just wear ashes on our head. We put ashes on HaKadosh Baruch Hu's head also. We put ashes on top of his Sefer Torah. The Medrash tells us a pasuk we're all familiar with. V'ani b'chazdecha batachti yogel libi b'shua secha. Translate those last words. Yogel libi, my heart is joy, overjoyed, b'shua secha. Writes the Medrash. Yogel libi b'shua secha should say yogel libi b'shua si, b'shua seinu. I'm overjoyed that I was saved. I was looking for that refuah, I was looking for that Yeshua, I was looking for a parnasa, and finally it came through. Now I'm excited, b'shua si, that I have been saved, that I have been helped. Writes the Medrash, this is a very difficult pasuk. What does David HaMelech mean? Yogel libi b'shua secha, that you have been saved? I'm reading the words of the Medrash. That the Yeshua shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself was saved. David HaMelech is celebrating the fact that now things are good for us, it means they're good for you as well. When things are bad for us, it means things are bad for the Ribono shel Olam Kaviyachol. An amazing comment of one of the Lubavitcher Rebbes, the Tzemach Tzedek. He says, we have a pasuk in Tehillim, Gam ki elech begeitz al maves, lo ira ra ki atayim adi. So, we know what the pasuk means. That even when things are difficult, even when things are very challenging, I'm not afraid. Why? Because ki atayim adi, because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with me. Writes at Tzemach Tzedek, very chassidish pshat. He says, let's put the comma in a different place. Gam ki elech begeitz al maves, lo ira. Even when things are bad, I'm not shaken up by it. Why? Because I deserve it. I understand. I've done things wrong in life. I know that I'm not perfect. I know that maybe it's an onesh for something. That's not what's bad. You know what's bad? Ra ki atayim adi. What bothers me is that you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, have to go through this torment as well. So the current crisis in Ukraine, Russia, I see that we're out of time, but let me just close with this comment, has made me think a whole lot. The last hour is a lot of what I've been thinking. Sorry for thinking out loud. But as I said yesterday, I had the opportunity to speak to the Rav in Pinsk, Belarus, who is a good friend, and what he was describing was heart-wrenching. But here's what I've been thinking about. Just hear me out. In the Psukim leading up to Kabbalah Satorah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives one instruction to the Jewish people, and that is, V'higbalta es ha'em saviv le'mar, hishamru lachem alos bahar unegoa b'katzehu. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu came down on Har Sinai and presented the Torah to us, Moshe Rabbeinu was instructed to make fences. The only instruction we were given was, make sure you don't go up on the mountain. Stay behind those fences. That's where you belong. It's the foundation of a Jewish life. It's the makeup. It's the architecture of what it means to live as a Jew. To respect boundaries. To set boundaries. To be careful not to overstep where we don't belong. And that goes for every aspect of Jewish life. It's about what we eat, what we consume, the vacations that we choose to take, the hobbies that we choose to be involved with, who we choose to interact with, how we choose to spend our money, how we choose to make decisions in life, is all about boundaries. It's all about respecting boundaries. It's about understanding what we should be involved with and what perhaps is inappropriate for us to be a part of. And I couldn't stop thinking about the fact that the current situation, where we see a greedy, ruthless autocrat, tyrant, who decided that he couldn't respect borders and boundaries, who decided that he needs to make an aggressive invasion, he needs to go on the offensive and infiltrate the border of another country and take it over, completely inappropriately. I just felt it's a reminder for us of how important it is for all of us to maintain, to reinforce, and to uphold our own personal boundaries. We're not going to fix the crisis in Ukraine, but we can certainly learn something from it. And this is where my head has been. How careful are we about the boundaries that we set for ourselves? So we're criticizing somebody who overstepped his boundaries, and we should. But let's use it as an opportunity to look inward and think about how careful we are with our boundaries. And I find, maybe I'm from a different generation than some in the room. Not maybe, I am, sorry. But social media has broken down so many boundaries. There's this incessant need that people have to overshare everything that's going on in their lives. It's overstepping a boundary. It's ruining other people's lives. I hear it from the other side. I'm not on social media platforms. I know a whole lot about it, but I'm not on social media platforms, and I choose not to be. But understand that when you share those pictures of what you made for dinner with the whole world, understand that it hurts other people. Understand that there's a price to pay for it. Understand there are members of our community who look at that with envy, who go into debt, who have a lack of shalom bias because of the picture that you posted. Yes, I've heard it from members of our community. A husband sees what another woman in this community posted she decided to make for dinner that night and comes home and yells at his wife, "Why can't we ever have this? And why don't we live up to that standard? You post your pictures of the vacation you went on. You understand that you're damaging lives, overstepping boundaries. Do whatever you need to do for your family, but respect boundaries. Understand that not everything needs to be shared. Think a little bit outside of yourself and understand what it can do to other people when you're going to post that post, when you're going to post that picture. And I find so often things are posted with no restraint, with no moderation, with no control. People get a WhatsApp and immediately they forward it. It's a mazel that WhatsApp has a limit that you can't forward it more than 5 times at a time. You have to give yourself more than 5 seconds because I can only send it to 5 people at a time, so I'm going to have to take 5 seconds till I can send it to the next 5 people. Think for a minute before you send that. Is this worthy of sending? Does it befit me to send such a thing? How many times in shul have people here sent me something that is so inappropriate, and then a minute later they try to erase it? I've seen it already, I heard it already, and I'm asking myself, did you not think for a second before you sent that to the rabbi? Now, dare you, you shouldn't send it to anyone. You're embarrassed that you sent it to me? If you're embarrassed that you sent it to me, you shouldn't be sending it to anyone. Think for 1 second before you overshare, before you overstep your boundary, before you put something out there in the world. Understand that you can't take it back. Understand that all that the foundation of our religion is about is boundaries. And the same goes when people post and write things. Look what the news is dealing with now. People are posting misinformation. People are posting videos from 5 years ago, and it's putting fear into community members in Ukraine when they're seeing videos of things that never happened. Who's going to pay the price for that? Who's taking a moment to think? Just be careful. Just think for 1 second before you do something. Do you confirm the validity of whatever it is that you're sharing? Somebody in this community sends you a message, "Oh, this person is dangerous. This person is a problem. This person was accused of this or that. This person was arrested." Think for a minute before you share that. Why are you sharing it? If it's a communal danger, then yes, we need to know about it. Then you should share it in an appropriate way. If it's not, do you understand the collateral damage? Yes, I talk to the children of these people who we spread stories about. They end up in my house in all hours of the day and night. Yes. Understand that you're destroying people's lives. We have teenagers who want to commit suicide because people are saying things about their parents. Yes, I've spoken to them. Think for a minute about boundaries. Think for a minute about what's appropriate. We can destroy lives literally when we don't respect boundaries. We need to use a little bit of discretion and think a little bit more and reestablish healthy and appropriate boundaries. After all, HaKadosh Baruch Hu in Tehillim is referred to as the one who is Gvul Samta Bal Ya'avorun. You look here, it's the last entry. David HaMelech says, and we say this every Rosh Chodesh in Tehillim, in Baruch Nafshi. David HaMelech describes HaKadosh Baruch Hu as the one who made a Gvul. Bal Ya'avorun, Bal Yeshuvan L'chasos Ha'aretz. You know what that means? HaKadosh Baruch Hu created the world. Imagine if the ocean didn't know its boundary. Look what happened when we had Hurricane Sandy. Everyone forgot? What happened there? The ocean didn't stick to its boundary. And in one night, a whole community was destroyed. HaKadosh Baruch Hu created a world, and He made boundaries. He made boundaries for where the water should go, where the water should not go, where dry land should start, where dry land should end, where there should be mountains, and where there should be forests, and where there should be deserts, and where everything should be. Gvul Samta Bal Ya'avorun. If one will overstep its boundary, it will inundate and overwhelm the world. We cannot survive that way. And this is really the foundation that all of Yiddishkeit rests on. This was the instruction that was given before Kabbalah Satorah, to set up healthy and appropriate boundaries. Think about a business where they don't have an infrastructure to clearly define roles and responsibilities. How long do you think that kind of business will last? It will implode. Yes, it's important to have boundaries. This is your job. This is not your job. This is where you're supposed to be. This is where you're not supposed to be. And if you don't have that, the business won't last. It will not sustain itself. So as we watch a crisis that is all about a person who is disrespectful of other people's boundaries, of other people's rights, of other people's ability to live within where they belong, it's an opportunity for us to think about the very same in our own lives. How careful are we about the boundaries that are set for us, about the boundaries that we need to set for ourselves, and about the boundaries that are healthy for a functioning community to be able to thrive. In Mirtz Hashem, we should have the opportunity that next week we should be able to talk about Yeshua Hashem Keherafayin. We should be able to talk about happy things, to be in the spirit of Purim, V'nahapochu. We should have the opportunity to share many, many happy and healthy